This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com. Check out our daily headlines produced in collaboration with Media General Newspapers at sevillepodcast.com. Will Charlottesville become a place where only the rich can live, or will it attract enough high-tech jobs here to provide for a middle class? That's the topic explored in a series of discussions being held by the Virginia Piedmont Technology Council, sponsored by the law firm LeClaire Ryan. VPTC Executive Director Jerry McLean introduces the first session, Choosing Our Future, Austin or Aspen.
It's great to have you here for our inaugural technology town hall. This is part one of the two-part series, Pursuing Our Technology Future, Austin or Aspen. And it's going to be a great conversation, and we're very happy that you are taking some time out of your day to join us. So with that, I want to welcome Mike Drawl from LeClaire Ryan. Mike is a board member with VPTC and has been very instrumental and a very enthusiastic voice in how we have begun to think about this conversation of Austin versus Aspen. And so I am very grateful to Mike personally and to LeClaire Ryan and his colleagues for helping make this series possible. Mike's going to introduce our two speakers, and please enjoy the conversation. We want this to be very interactive and very highly participatory. So again, welcome. Mike?
All right, my name is Mike Drawl. I'm a partner in the law firm of LeClaire Ryan, where I head the firm's technology and venture capital team. It's certainly our pleasure to sponsor the two-part VPTC Technology Town Hall series. The series promises to be provocative, and you'll want to mark your calendar for the second of these events, which is to be held here on February 22nd. You might well ask, why would our firm choose to sponsor this particular series? Well, let's just call it enlightened best self-interest. It may interest you to know that our firm currently represents more than 125 technology companies, and those range from information technology to nanotechnology to bioinformatics to pharmaceutical to gene splicing to high-tech manufacturing to digital floor advertising, just to name a few. It may also interest you to know that our firm has closed on more than 500 financings for those companies and others, ranging from friends and family to institutional venture capital to IPO. I personally have been and continue to be intimately involved with the Corporate Research Center in Blacksburg, Virginia, where our firm sponsors the VT KnowledgeWorks Incubator. We've also been intimately involved with the Virginia Biotechnology Center in Richmond, where our firm is helping the Virginia Active Angel Network hopefully start its new chapter beginning next month. I could go on with examples, but okay, enough of that. Hopefully you have the picture by now. So to say it's in our firm's enlightened best self-interest to further the growth of a vibrant technology-based economy in the Piedmont region is an understatement at best. So what exactly do we hope to accomplish with this series? Frame a debate? Austin? Aspen? In part, I guess, but my aspirations are much higher than that, not only for the series but for the Technology Council. My hope and belief is that this series and the Tech Council can begin to articulate a compelling vision for the future and start to articulate some concrete steps to turn that vision into a reality. I truly believe the Bible observation that says, without a vision, the people will perish. I think that holds true for cities as well. Without a vision, Charlottesville will perish. Maybe that's an overstatement, but at least it would fail to be everything that it could possibly be, which I think would be very sad. So beyond the vision, well-thought-out action steps are essential. Some of you know that I'm a big fan of self-improvement books, CDs, and seminars. Jim Rohn, one of my favorite personal improvement mentors, has a great way of putting this. You cannot drift your way to the top of the mountain. Those are really great words. How true. Action is essential. So here we are at a crossroads. Do we articulate the vision, set the goals, and begin to take the action steps or not? Does Charlottesville become all that it's capable of becoming, or settle for less? I certainly know what answer I prefer, but it's really for all of us here to decide. So now it's my distinct privilege to introduce our two speakers. Consider Gary and Katie to be your guides. Enjoy what they have to say. Consider it, but more importantly, let it galvanize you into action. President John F. Kennedy once asked Wernher von Braun, the famous and real rocket scientist, what it would take to go to the moon. Von Braun gave him this compelling five-word answer, the will to do it. Ponder that as you listen now to Gary's remarks and then Katie's remarks and the suggested action steps. Charlottesville, do we have the will to do it? Now it's my pleasure to introduce Gary Henry, Chairman of the Virginia Piedmont Tech Council. Gary is the principal consultant of G.F. Henry & Associates, a management consulting firm based in Charlottesville. Gary has more than 30 years of distinguished experience spanning leadership, strategy, business process, change management, finance, IT, and marketing. Prior to founding G.F. Henry & Associates, Gary was chairman and chief operating officer of Dominion Digital. He served as CEO from 2001 to 2003 when Dominion Digital was named one of the 50 fastest growing Virginia companies by the Virginia Chamber of Commerce. Gary's first career was with General Electric, where at the age of 22, he started a new business for GE in Europe, and over 6 years, he opened six offices all across the continent. Since leaving GE, Gary has been a founder of startup principal six times. He's been a CEO, CFO, and COO. He was named an Ernst & Young Virginia Entrepreneur of the Year in 2001. He's a member of the boards of the Virginia Piedmont Tech Council, where he's the chairman, and of the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce, where he's chairman of the Technology Roundtable. Gary's a graduate of the Georgia Institute of Technology and Electrical Engineering. And I'm going to do something a little unusual here because this is a kind of an iterative presentation. I'm going to introduce our second speaker as well because they'll be up here together, working together. So rather than break the flow of what will hopefully be a dialogue, I'm going to introduce Katie Bullard as well. Katie's a project manager at Angelou Economics in Austin, Texas, which is the largest independent economic development consulting firm in the United States and also the recognized leader in technology-based economic development. She's currently managing the development of economic development strategic plans in Houston, Texas, Chattanooga, Tennessee, and metropolitan Tulsa, Oklahoma. In addition to her project management work, she's written and published several articles, including University's Role in Economic Development and Attracting Young Professionals to Your Community, How and Why. The real interesting part is that Katie actually has roots here in Virginia, so she speaks with more than a casual knowledge of what's going on in Virginia in general, but Charlottesville in particular. She spent 2 years in Richmond as a real estate strategy consultant at Circuit City Stores, advertising executive management on site selection decisions. But her best memories of Virginia are here in Charlottesville. She spent several years as the budget director of the city of Charlottesville and is a 2002 graduate of Leadership Charlottesville. She graduated with high honors from the University of Virginia and earned a Bachelor of City Planning and a Master of Urban and Environmental Planning. So please join me in welcoming Gary and Katie both to their places here on the dais.
I'm glad to see all of you here. This is a very important and I hope enlightening discussion for our future. It's really about choosing what the future is going to be. And there's one thing that George Will said that I think is really appropriate for this. The future has a way of arriving unannounced. And I think this is particularly appropriate for Charlottesville and its surrounding area. When we say Charlottesville, we're really talking about the region. And that is that I think if those of you who've been in the area for 15 or 20 years were to look back from that point and say, what would Charlottesville look like today? I think you'd have to agree you're a bit surprised by what Charlottesville is now. And I would contend that unless we take some deliberate actions, we're going to be pretty surprised with what Charlottesville and its surrounding area is going to look like in the future. And so that's the discussion we'd like to have. What can we do that will have an influence on that? What do we want to do? And one thing that has happened is a lot of different organizations, especially magazines, have had a way of defining what Charlottesville is for us. We've been on the cover of a number. We've been named number one or one of the best in a number of cases. A lot of people outside of Charlottesville have defined what our area is to us. And I think it's about time we started thinking about what we would like the area to be. If you look at what's in our news, you can see that there's a number of issues that come up rather than headlines about being number one. There's low unemployment, but we have PhDs waiting tables. I think unemployment and the unemployment rate is one of the most misleading statistics that's so frequently cited for our area. I think all of you who are in the business community understand what this means in terms of underemployment. You know, the region's in danger of losing affordable housing and being affordable to live in. There's been a lot of discussion in the press and among our nonprofit groups about what this means for the area. As well as, you know, there's been a constant drain of what were our traditional manufacturing jobs and what's going to replace those jobs. I think we have one suggestion for that replacement. And that suggestion started back in the fall when we said, well, technology is perhaps a candidate for replacing some of those jobs and having some other impact. And as that dialogue began, that's what evolved into this discussion, the first public discussion we're having here today on what this topic means for our future. We'd really like to see us create a headline for the magazine that says that this is an area that should be considered the best place to build and sustain a technology enterprise. We believe that would have a lot of benefits, but I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. Let's look at some things that define the crossroads that we're at right now. There's a number of traits that are commonly attributed to our area, and I've grouped them into two sets. In the first one, it says we're considered a great place to retire, and I've just heard that JOB is about to have a campaign on this is the number one place to retire. It clearly attracts the wealthy, in large part in many ways, because the wealthy are the only ones who can afford some of the nicer things that the area has to offer. Economic diversity is weakening. Tourism is strong. Matter of fact, I think in 2005, the tourism jobs were up 6.3%. It's definitely a growing part of our community. Environmental beauty is definitely one of the draws. But in another set, we're a university town. We have a world-class UVA right here. It's fairly culturally diverse for a number of reasons. It does have a small but growing tech community, and we have a fairly strong arts community, which I think is getting stronger every day. And I think nobody would really disagree that these things are happening for us. But these similarities also point us toward two possible destinations. Not that we would exactly arrive at a destination exactly like one of these, but Aspen, Colorado, and Austin, Texas share those two sets of traits. And I believe we're at a crossroads right now where if we continue without any change, we're going to be much more like Aspen, Colorado than we are Austin, Texas. That's the default path we're on. And what are some of the characteristics for Aspen? Strong tourism industry, considered a special place in the state. They also have this environmentally aware population there, too. But it's very culturally homogeneous. due to its high cost of living. It's a growing retirement community, and it's named the best place to visit if you can afford to. I understand that there are people who pay $1,000 to $2,000 during their week stay just to become a member of the restaurant that they want to attend. That's at one end of the spectrum. Then there's Austin, Texas. This is another path. It too has the University of Texas, a large university in its town. It has a strong arts community. It's considered a special place. It has environmentally aware people. It's culturally diverse. It has a very vibrant and growing technology industry, and it's been also named the best place to live. So as we sit where we are, I think we need to consider, what are the things that we're doing or not doing that allow us to go down a path that's in that direction toward Aspen, Colorado, or down a path that's more like Austin, Texas? And I think as we look at the difference, think of some of the things that could be down the road, traits that will manifest themselves in Charlottesville. Look at the cost of living in Aspen versus Austin versus Charlottesville. 402 to 107 in Charlottesville. Austin, on the other hand, at 95. Look at the cost of housing. Now, this is an extreme case where $3.1 million is the average cost of housing in Aspen, Colorado, and I'm not saying we'll ever be like that. But already at $255,000 compared to $164,000 in Austin, Texas, which is one of the more expensive places in the state of Texas, we're already taking our first steps down that path that leads a bit more toward Aspen, Colorado. Add to that, if you put those numbers together, there's a third point at the bottom of this slide, the state of the middle class. The Aspen, Colorado local government will say themselves that they have no middle class, not a small middle class, no middle class. And that's another consequence of being a retirement community for the wealthy. Is that a path that we want to go down? Or would we like to be a bit more like Austin, Texas, where there's a very diverse economic middle class? So we're not proposing that technology is the answer to fix everything, but rather that technology and innovation in the community is a way to balance retirement and tourism, because those things are not going to go away. They're going to be a part of our community for sure. But to add balance back into things, we need something else. And we believe technology is the way. And later, I think Katie will give you all kinds of evidence about why technology, of all the things you could put on the other side of the fulcrum here, is the choice to balance out the economy. One thing is, what does this mean? Does this mean we have this huge factory moving to town? Is that what technology looks like for our area? No, not at all. In our region, technology means research, design, and development. It means innovation. It means creating those new ideas. And by the way, that's fairly consistent with the kind of technology companies that are already here. And there will be as many homegrown businesses as there would be otherwise. So entrepreneurship is a very key component to making that happen. And we already see some of that happening in the technology that comes from the university and lands in our local area. And these businesses, whether they're technology businesses that are already here, where 80% of them would fit in this category, or whether they move here, or especially if they're grown here, they're going to be small, in the range of 5 to 25 people. So what does that mean? That means that those businesses could relocate to almost any available office space in this area, commercial office space, and you would hardly know they're here. It doesn't mean that a big new building will be built on some large main thoroughfare someplace. It means these workers will add those jobs to our economy, will add that diversity to our age population, where 64 and older is our largest growing age demographic in our MSA. It'll add 25 to 44-year-olds. We believe the infrastructure impact would be so small because they can fit into what we already have. Nothing new is needed for that. Matter of fact, if you look at what the Virginia Center for Innovative Technology, our own CIT, said are the things that you need to have a thriving tech community, you can look at the list and read it for yourself. I think we have most of these. Some not as strong as they need to be, we have work we should do if we want to have this happen, but we have all of the raw ingredients to get that going. So, you know, what else will it take to make this happen? And, you know, playing off of what Mike said earlier, it's clearly the will to do it that we need. We need vision, leadership, and we need regional cooperation. Above all, we need that regional cooperation, something that's long been missing in this community. A strategy, the zeal, the aggressiveness, and then the application of the resources, the rich, deep resources we have here. We have very smart people here, very smart people in this room, who if we all brought something to bear to this issue, we could make a difference. And this is clearly something that doesn't happen overnight. We have to take a long-term view for it. And we're going to have to let the world know how we think of ourselves versus the world in their headlines telling us what they think of us. So we need some marketing going in the other direction. In an effort to do something about that regional cooperation, two Fridays ago, we invited everybody with an open invitation for anyone else that they wanted to invite to come and listen to a preview of this pitch. And here are all the people that we invited to that particular event, and a good number of them showed up, and they've seen a preview of this. We're doing everything we know to engage everyone. This cannot happen without cooperation between all of the agencies and those entities that have a part to play here. And we definitely want to have everyone who wants to be involved. You know, with enough help, we can absolutely build a technology-based economy for our region with all the benefits that Katie is going to show you. So what is it that the Technology Council is going to do? I'm going to declare here now for all of you, before all of you, the three things that we've set forward to do our part toward this, and we would like to do more. First, we're bringing this conversation to the community, because this is something we need to discuss. We all have a lot at stake. We're going to develop a technology incubator for our region because we believe as many of these technology businesses are going to be homegrown as they are otherwise. So the entrepreneurship and the nurturing of that is quite important. And we're going to continue and strengthen our drive for workforce development. We already have a number of things that we're doing there, and we're going to try and do more. We think with all of these, we can find and we can create those career ladder jobs that everyone talks about that don't exist. Those of you who are old enough to have children in this area, this direction gives an opportunity for them to have a job here rather than have to move away. It gives an opportunity for those graduates of our university to have a place to work versus have to move away. And just imagine if the students and the knowledge workers and the people in the 25 to 44-year-old group all move away, what this community would look like. So I think we have a lot at stake. So in the portfolio of things that we've done over the years, the Tech Tour, the Industry Future Summit, the Tech Awards, the annual symposium, the luncheon series of which this is one, and the after hours and roundtables, we're now adding also a technology index. Something, we don't even know what the index will, how it will be calculated yet. That's part of what we're going to do. It's going to measure where are we and have we made any progress toward having a technology sector that can survive here, as well as the technology incubator to help nurture those that would start and grow here. So I think with those two additions, we're going to be doing our part. We want to do more, and we want you to be involved. So now I'd like to turn it over to Katie to give you some reasons why technology is the choice to balance the economy.
So up until today, I thought that the most nerve-wracking thing in the entire world was to give a budget presentation to the Charlottesville City Council. And it was pretty bad. However, having to give a presentation to three of my former bosses is even worse, especially when it's on economic development, and our economic development guru is here in the audience today. So I apologize. Bear with me. I'm thrilled to be here today, and I'm thrilled particularly to be talking on this topic of economic development and increasing high impact, high wage job opportunities for this community. Let me tell you a little story. Back in Austin, I don't know what the title is. I do student outreach for UVA, for the UVA Alumni Club of Austin, essentially meaning we go to the high schools and recruit high school students to come from Austin to UVA. Part of that program is bringing together other Austin area alumni for a panel where we speak to prospective UVA students about coming to UVA and Charlottesville. This past year, we had 8, I think, alumni there who were there in Austin, half of which are grad students at UT and half of which are just working in Austin. Every single person that was up there wanted to talk about Charlottesville more than they wanted to talk about UVA. And that's not a slight to UVA at all. But literally, I think there were tears in people's eyes as they spoke about Charlottesville and how much they loved Charlottesville. And to a person, every single one of them said they would come back if the jobs were available for them to come back. So that really indicates the potential that's here for this kind of economic growth in the community. I'm going to very briefly talk a little bit about our firm, Angelou Economics, why technology is an important industry to target. What's the Austin story? Why in the world are we comparing Charlottesville, Virginia to a big city in Texas, of all places? What are some traits of high-tech communities? And then finally, what are the trends here in Charlottesville and some of the opportunities that I see as the greatest opportunities? So Angelou Economics, we're one of the largest independent economic development consulting firms in the U.S., primarily focused on technology-based economic development, but run the gamut in terms of economic development strategic planning. We also have a site selection practice. So we not only work for communities, for chambers of commerce, cities, economic development organizations, but we also work for corporate clients who are looking for the right location for their next facility or office building. So that helps inform the other side of our practice. Our founder, Angelos Angelou, so the name doesn't come from Maya Angelou, is the former vice president for economic development for the Austin Chamber, and he was the vice president from the mid-80s to the mid-90s and helped to recruit a lot of those companies from Silicon Valley to Austin and was there as Austin made that transition from just another college town to a recognized leader in technology. Again, this is our business model. Having both sides of the firm, I think, really helps the practice. Some of our public sector clients are here in Virginia, range from small cities to big cities. We've worked for Hampton Roads Economic Development Alliance, the Greater Richmond Partnership, recently did some work for Winchester and Frederick County. You can see we've also done some work for international clients, including the Czech Republic and Portugal. Our private sector clients primarily are concentrated in the technology sector. Dell, Intel, AMD, HP, the former Compaq, Applied Materials. We've also done a little bit of work in the automotive field and health services. Okay, so I had to do that piece. So why are we talking about technology-based economic development? The Milken Institute found that 65% of the difference in the economic success of regions is accounted for by the growth and presence of technology industries. Why would they say that? Well, technology is the best wealth generator of any industry in the U.S. It only is comprised of 4% of the U.S. workforce, but contributes 35% to the gross domestic product every year. In the future, manufacturing is going overseas and is continually being offshored. Lower value add processes will continue to be offshored. The advantage lies in regions that can design and be innovative and design the technology behind those processes. The other great thing about technology, and I know this is important for this community, is that, as Gary mentioned, technology industries generally have a very low burden on infrastructure in the community. They don't take up large tracts of land. They aren't large necessarily users, utilities of waters, of precious natural resources. So you get the biggest bang for your buck when you're recruiting small technology companies. The average wages are also extremely high. As you can see, although the gap has been decreasing between technology-based companies and non-technology-based companies, it's still about double that of a non-technology industry. And as we'll see later, wages and low wages in particular are a large part of the problem, of the issue here in Charlottesville. Technology also is one of the fastest growing fields in the U.S. If you look at the top 10 jobs that are expected to grow over the next 10 years, half of them are in the technology field and half of them are in the health services field. So those two industries will contribute most to the job growth over the next 10 years or through 2014, since it's already 2007. Some of the places where we're seeing the most activity in tech-based economic development are in a couple of different industries. One is very large, and we're lumping a lot of things in here, but essentially the bioconvergence, life sciences, both life sciences R&D, medical device manufacturing, pharmaceutical manufacturing, healthcare, and health information technologies. We're also seeing a lot of activity in data centers. Data centers are redundant sources of backups for companies' networks, information, particularly after 9/11. Used to be that large companies, Google, Microsoft, the Yahoos, had little small data centers across the U.S. or they were concentrated wherever their headquarters were, which happened to be in large metropolitan areas. And that posed a great risk to them. So what's happening is that a lot of companies are now going to smaller metropolitan areas and building redundant data centers. These data centers don't necessarily bring a lot of people with them, but they bring a lot of capital investment and very high-wage jobs. So a typical data center may use 100,000 square feet, but only 75 jobs. They pay an average of $70,000 a year and primarily are capital. And that capital, those computers, those servers, are replaced every 2 to 3 years. So it brings an infusion into the community every couple of years. Another industry that we see a lot of activity is game design. You'll even see most universities now are starting to offer degrees in video game design. Clean energy, alternative energies, fuel cells, solar power, wind power, biomass, and then software, wireless, and nanotechnology, which there's a lot of buzz about, and there's certainly activity going on here in Charlottesville. Hasn't quite reached the critical mass yet, but that's an area of growing promise. So, Austin. Why are we talking about Austin? I put this up because I know Charlottesville loves rankings too. So it's a pretty diverse group of rankings, and I think that is really what makes this story so compelling, is that it's not just an attractive place for the wealthy to live. It's not just a great place for outdoor recreation. It's not just someplace that's very environmentally conscious, but it's also a great place for business. It's a great place for young people to live and to be able to afford. It has a great overall standard of living. So how in the world did they get there? Well, just 20 years ago, Austin really was just another sleepy college town. Happened to be the state capital. But in the scheme of things, particularly in Texas, it really wasn't a major player on the scene. Starting in about 1984, there was a concerted effort, and we'll talk more about this, to promote and develop a high-tech economy. Since then, that focus has widened to promoting social equity, civic entrepreneurship, and then obviously after the dot-com bust in the early 2000s, how to recover from that and how to continue to diversify the economy so that those effects wouldn't be felt again. What's happened between 1980 and 2005 since there's been this focus on technology? Well, employment has almost tripled. The gross regional product has grown by almost 4 times. The population has almost tripled, and I'm not advocating that necessarily. Retail sales have grown about 8 times. Venture capital funding has gone from nothing to about $403 million annually. And the median household income has tripled as well. So how did they do that? Well, it was a recognition that economic development was not necessarily a dirty word. and that it wasn't just about industrial relocation and bringing in the next big manufacturing plant or the next big auto assembly plant. It was about a little bit of that, but mainly making sure that the companies that were existing in Austin at the time were happy and were prosperous and were thriving, expanding them, and then building new companies from within and promoting a culture of entrepreneurship. And so they pulled this three-pronged attack of economic development together and then decided that they also need a three-pronged attack to implement that, and it had to come from three different sectors. Those sectors were academia, primarily the University of Texas, the public sector, and the business sector. And by bringing all three together, they had all the ingredients necessary to really put together a robust effort at attracting these high-tech companies. There was also a recognition that any kind of economic development strategy first had to be sold within the community. So there were internal strategies that were developed initially. Those included identifying the companies within Austin's current target industries that they were going to monitor and aggressively recruit. And most of those came from recommendations from their own existing companies. So instead of feeling threatened of additional competition, the existing companies said, okay, we have a network of companies within our industry that we know would also be interested in coming to Austin. 3,000 volunteers were briefed on this economic development strategy because the community also recognized that they were going to be your best salesperson. If their peer in San Francisco called and said, okay, look, I'm getting the spiel from the Chamber of Commerce. What's the real story in Austin? Are you really happy? Are you finding the workforce? And they were able to say yes. Then that was really a great selling point. They also very deliberately reached out to the media. They created press releases, TV spots on the strategy and made sure that it consistently remained on the forefront of the newspapers and the TV stations. Some of the partnerships that they formed between the three sectors included the IC Squared Institute, the International Semitech Consortium, which is the international research organization for the semiconductor industry, worked to get that there in Austin. The Austin Technology Incubator, which happens to be the home of Dell Computers, started out of this small little lab. Within the Austin Technology Incubator, there's now a clean energy incubator. And then also creating the Austin Tech Council, which is very similar to what you have here in the Virginia Piedmont Technology Council. Also recognize that an important component of economic development is workforce development. And so within the specific technology-related target industries that were identified, they made sure that there were specific workforce development programs, not necessarily at UT, but at Austin Community College, and UT and some of the tech centers for each one of those target industries. So once they had their internal act together, they focused on some external strategies. Again, they created what they called an executive partnership, and they encouraged peer-to-peer contacts between the Austin executives and the executives in these targeted industries across the nation. They had full-scale marketing missions, face-to-face meetings in the Silicon Valley in Boston. They would go to all of the universities in Boston to their college fairs and generally bring home 1,000 to 2,000 of them back to Austin to work for the companies there. They met with the editorial boards, the Wall Street Journal, Trade and Industry Magazine, and it wasn't just the local government leaders or the local ED leaders. It was Michael Dell. It was the UT president. And it was George Kosmetsky, who is the founder of IC Squared Institute. And then they also invited media from these other communities to come to Austin and briefed them on all the great things that were in Austin. Doing all of that then really led them to where they were by about the mid-90s. The results that they've seen in terms of employment have been pretty staggering. Between 1990 and 2000, you can see there were tremendous increases in each one of these. These are the primary tech sectors in Austin. They wouldn't necessarily be the right tech sectors for Charlottesville, but these were the ones that exist in Austin. Obviously, there was a recession in the early 2000s, and the Austin economy was hit as many others were. The nice thing about Austin was, though, because it was such an attractive place to live and because it was relatively affordable to live, that a lot of the people who found themselves without a job in 2000 decided to go ahead and stay, wait around, maybe start their own companies until they got back on their feet. And that's what happened. So there's been, again, significant progress between 2000 and 2005, particularly in the information and semiconductor, which doesn't reflect the latest new announcement by Samsung that they're going to build their first 300-millimeter fab, U.S. fab, in Austin as well. If you look at Austin's clusters, and we'll look at Charlottesville's clusters in just a minute, the strongest five clusters in Austin are all technology-related industries. And that's surprising considering, again, you have a state capital and you have the largest university in the United States. This isn't necessarily the largest employment concentration, who employs the most, but relative to the U.S. average of employment in each of these industries, how strong or weak is Austin's? So the semiconductor industry, computer equipment, communications equipment, software, and communication services are the five largest clusters in the Austin metropolitan area. After that, you see higher education and research. Most dramatically, wages have increased over the past 15 years, in the technology industries even. Within the semiconductor industry, wages have tripled. Within the computer and electronic manufacturing industry, wages have more than tripled. In the software industry, more than doubled, and in the consulting industry, more than doubled. And most of that consulting is IT consulting. Venture capital funding, as I mentioned, went from nothing to about $403 million in 2005, and that's not at its peak. In the early 2000s, you can see venture capital funding in 2000 was actually $2.2 billion just that year in Austin. We'll look at Charlottesville in just a minute, but venture capital funding is key to growing that entrepreneurial culture here in the community. There's a lot of ideas out there that just can't find access to capital to really make them happen. And when you've got a large research university like you have here in Charlottesville, and frankly, you have a lot of wealth here in Charlottesville, those numbers are reachable. So the lesson I think that the Austin story really tells is that you can't be complacent and that it takes a concerted effort, knowing who you are and what you want to be, to really attract this kind of industry. It didn't happen by chance. Those companies from San Francisco didn't just happen upon Austin. You can also be a world-class community, Gary, world-class. You can be a best place to live, and you can be a sustainable, environmentally conscious city, and also embrace a form of focused and targeted economic development. So what are some of the trends that we're seeing in Charlottesville? I don't think at all that we're saying that Charlottesville necessarily wants to be Austin. Definitely doesn't want to be the size of Austin. I can vouch for the traffic problems. 29 is nothing compared to I-35. But there are components of it that we want to bring here. So if you look at Austin, if you look at Seattle, the Silicon Valley, Raleigh-Durham, some of the smaller communities like Boulder, Colorado, what are some of the common elements that all these high-tech regions have? Well, they all have a prominent university. They all have a well-educated young population, very creative entrepreneurial environment, excellent quality of life, robust research and development, and very strong venture capital funding. We'll come back to this when we finish with the Charlottesville analysis and see kind of where Charlottesville ranks on each of these. These numbers I know are small, so I'm just going to highlight some of them. We took Charlottesville and compared to two tech regions, Austin, Texas, and Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, and then comparing to the U.S. average. And there are a couple of key data points that are really interesting. if you look at the second line, which is the percentage age 25 to 44, and this is what we tend to call the young professional population. It's not necessarily just right out of school. These are students who have, people who have been out for a couple of years and are starting to establish their careers. The percentage in Charlottesville of your entire population that's between the ages of 25 and 44 is 29%. The U.S. average is 28%, so you're slightly higher than that. Austin's 34%. Raleigh-Durham is almost 33%. If you look at almost any technology region, that number is always right or at 33% or higher. And it's not necessarily a magic number, but it's a trait. And a lot of times, we recently worked for Samsung to help them decide that Austin was the right place for this new fab of theirs. And that was one of the key metrics that they wanted, was ranking what percentage of that population was between the ages of 25 to 44. And if it wasn't 33%, they wouldn't consider that area. So that's an area of growth. And it's also unusual because most college towns, frankly, have a much higher percentage there. What that's indicating is that we're not keeping the UVA graduates here in Charlottesville. And we'll talk more about that in a minute, too. What is good is that those that are here are very well educated. So you've got a great foundation. 49% of them have a bachelor's degree or higher. The median income in Charlottesville is slightly higher than the U.S. average. It's lower than Austin, it's lower than Raleigh-Durham, and the problem is that, as we saw, the cost of living is higher than the U.S. average. When you look at the median home price in Charlottesville, about $260,000 versus the median home price in Austin, which now has gone up from $165,000 to $172,000, and it's people are up in arms, and you compare that to the median incomes, any person who is offered, say, $57,000 in Austin and realizes they can buy a house for $165,000 and is offered $50,000 in Charlottesville and is going to have to pay $260,000 for a house, has a pretty easy decision, frankly, to make. So that's where the rub and where the pressure lies, is that the wages here are not necessarily keeping pace with the cost of living. And people can find good quality of life, sometimes as good a quality of life as you can find in Charlottesville, with a lower cost of living and with higher wages. If we look at the rankings of the top R&D universities, what the National Science Foundation did was they took all of the universities in the United States, research universities, and ranked them in terms of their total R&D expenditures. Obviously, UVA is a top 25 ranked school in the country, but in terms of research and development expenditures, it's not necessarily that high. So out of all the research and development universities, UVA ranks about 67th in terms of total R&D expenditures. The University of Texas is about 32nd, and Duke, which is the highest rated R&D university in Raleigh-Durham, is 12th. Not having as much R&D going on is going to limit the ability to commercialize that technology as it comes out of UVA and to turn that into a viable business enterprise here in the Charlottesville region. Another really interesting point that I saw, and I got this from the UVA's engineering school. Is there anybody here from the engineering school? Yes. Okay. Austin, the University of Texas readily promotes the fact that 40% of their engineering grads stay in Austin. 70% stay in the state of Texas, but 40% actually find jobs and stay in Austin. When I called the career services office at the engineering school here, although they didn't have specific numbers, the anecdotal evidence was one or two stay here in Charlottesville, but that many more would want to if those jobs were available here. Again, going back to the experience that I had back in Austin. The wages, even within the technology industry, again, are slightly lower here than they are in these other high-tech communities and lower than the national averages. So overall, the point, I think the main point in this comparison, is just that rub between incomes and wages and the cost of living in this community. And that if the wages were higher and if there were more job opportunities here, you'd have a larger proportion of your graduates and of your young professionals that are able to stay here and live here. This is one of those fun charts. This is a bubble cluster chart, and again, I know you can't see everything, but I'll bring out the highlights. What this is these are your clusters ranked by cluster strength and by growth within the community. So along the y-axis, the vertical axis going up and down, is your cluster strength. Sorry. Anything that's above the 1.0 line is a strong cluster here in Charlottesville. So your strong clusters are higher education and research, which is off the chart, health services, biotechnology, aerospace and defense, and mass media. Along the x-axis is how fast that industry has been growing in the United States between 1998 and 2006. So those industries that are on the right-hand side of the 100% mark are growing faster than the national overall average of industry growth. Those that are on the left-hand side are industries that are growing slower than the national growth. So the right-hand, the upper right-hand quadrant would be the one that you'd want to see kind of most of your industries in. They're strong clusters in Charlottesville, and they're growing faster than the national average. There are some, but there's actually very few strong clusters. When you look at this compared to other communities, and we do this for every single community we work with, this is a pretty flat bubble chart where everything kind of is at the bottom other than the one, higher education and research. And what's interesting about higher education research is although it provides great jobs for the community, UVA has an immeasurable contribution to Charlottesville. The product that it creates, those knowledge workers, leave the community. So you don't really get the full impact of that kind of industry as you would from a biotech industry or a software industry. Now, there are some high-tech industries that have been gaining in strength in Charlottesville over the past 10 years. Those include software and IT services, which is the small purple dot all the way over to the right. Biotechnology has actually decreased in strength over the past 10 years. Communication services is moving up. Electronics has moved up. But overall, I would say software and IT looks like the primary technology industry that's showing the most promise in the region. So what this points out is that there's not a lot of diversity and depth in this economy. And when you think about a young professional or someone in that 25 to 44 age group, we do a lot of kind of psychology of that person. They tend to change jobs a lot, right? They also may change careers a couple of times. So when they decide where they're going to settle, where they're going to settle their family, they want to be in a community where if they ever did decide to change their jobs, change their careers, they wanted advancement opportunities, they want a community that has a very diverse, deep economy. If we look at wages in Charlottesville versus Austin and Raleigh-Durham, some select target industries, again, typically they're lower, and they're always lower than the U.S. average. I think the most striking one is software, which is your growing, which is probably your most promising industry. The average wage in Charlottesville is only about $60,000. In Austin, it's $93,000. In the U.S., it's $100,000. If you look at venture capital funding in Charlottesville as a percentage of the entire state's venture capital funding, Charlottesville gets about 3% of Virginia's venture capital funding. The Northern Virginia area by far gets the most. Richmond comes in second, Hampton Roads and Blacksburg after that. Austin, on the other hand, gets about 65% of Texas's venture capital funding. And when you consider that Houston and Dallas are by far, and San Antonio are by far larger cities, that's pretty impressive. So this is an area we're going to focus on. There are some really great things, though, happening in Charlottesville. There have been some great new announcements, and I think if you look at these companies and the sectors that they're in, they're really all in some of those promising niche sectors that I talked about in the opening section. Princeton Biomed Tech, 115 jobs. Athena Innovative Solutions added 50 jobs. Humagen, is that how it's pronounced? Fertility Diagnostics, a healthcare technology firm, added 10 jobs. Video gaming technologies added 80 jobs. There's a huge nanotechnology initiative at the University of Virginia and the State NanoQuest Institute being here at UVA. And then even the Institute for Advanced Technology and Humanities at UVA got a grant for visualization and virtual reality research. So technology spans a lot of different industries. It's not necessarily just computers, as a lot of times we may think of them. And there are things going on here, and the companies that are here seem to be doing fairly well. So you're starting from a really good point. A lot of times we work with communities that have lost everything. We worked for Binghamton, New York, where IBM, the home of IBM, IBM left. I mean, 10,000 jobs were gone in a day, and then they came and said, okay, now what do we do? What they really should have done is come well before that and said, how do we keep IBM? How do we keep them happy? How do we grow them? How do we get their suppliers here? How do we create this cluster, this critical mass of technology companies? You're starting from a position of strength. So this is more of a question to you to think about, especially as we get into the questions. Very roughly, when we look at how Charlottesville compares to the traits of a high-tech town, yes, there's a prominent university here. Is there a well-educated young population? Well, what's here is well-educated, but the critical mass of that 25 to 44 population isn't necessarily here at the same kind of level that you'd want in a technology hub. Is there a creative and entrepreneurial environment? Very creative. Love for the arts, great arts and cultural amenities here. Maybe not all of the resources in place for strong entrepreneurship yet, with the lack of venture capital funding and some of the R&D that's down below. Excellent quality of life. I didn't need to really put a question mark there. However, that standard of living really plays into the quality of life. And for some people, quality of life does mean a job that pays well enough that I can afford a house that I want to live in and isn't just the wonderful natural beauty and all the other things that you have here in Charlottesville. Robust R&D, University of Virginia is a great research institution. It looks like there may be more opportunities to strengthen some of the research capabilities in some specific areas. And then strong venture capital funding. Again, it exists, which is more than what Austin had when Austin got started, but relatively speaking, isn't as high as you'd want to see it. So what are the requirements? What do we need to do going from here? I think what it takes to compete is to build a really strong interdisciplinary economic development team. That means university officials, public sector officials, private sector companies buying in and committing themselves to this idea and recognizing that, again, economic development doesn't just have to be about growth for the sake of growth. We want to align the targets with the community goals, and you can do that by using technology. We want to make sure that the kinds of economic development that we attract is contributes to the quality of life, contributes to high-wage job growth, is able to retain the young workforce, and increases entrepreneurship. And I'll give you an example in Austin of this. Toyota is now building a manufacturing facility outside of San Antonio. They first came to Austin, and Austin said no. That's not the kind of industry that we want in this community. And many people were up in arms. That's typically kind of the holy grail of economic development, right? If we could just get an auto manufacturing plant. It wasn't for Austin. What Austin is doing, though, is they're focusing on recruiting suppliers, particularly alternative fuel type suppliers for Toyota that are smaller, have less of a burden on the infrastructure in the region, which has very limited water supply, and that's where they want to focus their efforts. So you can do that. You can match the types of targets with your goals. We want to align your economic development targets with the higher education assets that you already have here at UVA. So the nanotech research that's going on, the virtual reality research that's going on. UT had a particularly strong computer science and engineering program. That's where they aligned their focus. We want to enhance technology commercialization efforts, and Dr. Ring, who will be here for the next presentation, will actually focus a lot on technology commercialization and how to make that happen. focus on public and private collaboration, retaining and recruiting that young professional demographic, and become a marketing machine. This is just a real quick checklist of the kinds of things we're looking for. Infrastructure, I think you have most of here. I know VPTC is looking at developing that technology incubator, which is a key component to that. Some of the things I think that could be focused on here, ethnic diversity in terms of your demographics. Particularly, a lot of these technology companies are very diverse companies, and they want to make sure that their employees feel welcome wherever it is that they go. So that's an interesting component for that. Some of my final thoughts for Charlottesville, again, focus on leveraging the assets that you already have. We give this kind of speech where we talk about technology-based economic development in communities like Conway, Arkansas, sorry if anybody's from Conway, which is a beautiful town, Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, smaller communities that, although they can gain traction in this area, don't nearly have the potential that Charlottesville has, and will never, frankly, have the potential that Charlottesville has. So you have a lot of these assets already in place. Life sciences, nanotech, gaming, virtual reality, that appears to be where there's a lot of focus right now. Increasing research and development, increasing venture capital and angel funding, retaining your UVA grads, educating the community just like this about what technology-based economic development is, and then finally, marketing. And I think this is critical because I know when I was here, there was always kind of a feeling that we don't really need to market ourselves, that, which is to an extent true in this region, but that everybody knows about Charlottesville, they know how great it is, and if they come, great, but we're not going to go out and try to find them. What happens when you do that is you become a very limiting community. And you limit yourselves only to the people who can afford to come here on their own. And I don't think that's what Charlottesville wants to do. So by very focused marketing efforts, I think that you can really diversify the economy and bring back those middle-class jobs, middle-class wages that are starting to disappear. And I think that's all. I'm going to invite Gary back up.
So please join me in thanking Katie and Gary again for that great presentation set. We're going to take questions. We are, with the grateful assistance of Sean Tubbs and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, recording this for podcasting. So I would just ask that you put your hand up if you have a question. I'll come over to you with the mic so we can get everything recorded. So let's start some questions.
I'm Bill Stilley, and I just had a question. So we talk about Austin versus Aspen. Does Aspen, when you've talked to them, do they feel like they have a problem, and are they trying to adjust, or are they actually happy that they've gone down that path?
I have to admit, you know, we've only had a limited amount of conversation with that, but I think that they recognize that they have some issues. The exclusivity, the entirely homogeneous population of people that they have there in every possible diversity means. They're wealthy, white, affluent people. They recognize that's an issue. Just to run the town, they have problems. Where are the people who are going to run the lifts, man the restaurants, and open and close the shops? Those are all issues and problems for them. So I think they recognize that it's a real problem for them to keep things running there.
And I can't speak specifically on Aspen, but I know we've worked for some communities that aren't to the Aspen scale yet, but are getting there, like in Asheville, North Carolina, and they're recognizing that there's a significant problem. Their job growth is significantly lagging the national averages. They're losing that middle class, and they're putting forth a concerted effort to diversify their economy.
We have a question over here.
It's not really a question. I wanted to answer your Aspen question. If you Google Aspen, Colorado, and finance department, you can read a report from the director of finance from Aspen, from the city of Aspen, where she is begging the city to do something because they have no middle class, and that people are having to commute for 2 hours just so that they can live close by to run the ski lifts. So if you Google those terms, you can find that report, and you'll see that the city absolutely believes they have a problem.
The other thing about Aspen is I think that their subsidized housing is actually their government workers. I mean, the government pays, right? Tell us that to the County Board of Supervisors and City Council. They're having to subsidize those workers because that's their middle, their lower to middle class.
Hi, Brian Wheeler with Charlottesville Tomorrow. I wonder if in your research thus far, is there another community about our size that's put themselves on this track of technology-based economic development? And because it seems like what you're talking about is critical mass, and I'm wondering if you've given some thought as to how many companies that would be, what's the critical mass in population or number of tech companies, and is there somebody else in the country we can look to as an example that's our size?
Well, let me first address the critical mass question. It's not about critical mass. First, let me just describe what critical mass really means. When you're in the technology industry, especially when you're having entrepreneurial technology companies created, some of them are going to make it, some of them are not, some are going to morph into something else. And what we want to protect in the critical mass are the people who are working in those jobs. We don't want to protect the company. The company will come and go and live its life as it succeeds or fails in the marketplace, but we want when one of them changes or moves or even succeeds and moves out of town, perhaps, we want the people who were there to have an opportunity to move to another job in town. Critical mass is having enough of those opportunities that so somebody does not have to leave town in order to stay in their particular career. That's what critical mass is about. So it's not about doubling the number of companies. It's not about reaching a certain amount of revenue. It's about having sufficient opportunity that those talented resources, those workers who are here, don't have to depart if their job disappears, which, by and large, all of you will know that now. If that happens today, that's typically the outcome. Do you have a comparable?
In terms of some of the other communities, I have to be honest, most of them are still very expensive places to live, but there are some that are focusing on technology, like Boulder, Colorado. Charleston, South Carolina, is really working hard at diversifying their economy. They've created what they call a digital corridor group there in Charleston, and they're focusing actually on taking all of the second-floor office space within their downtown district and kind of creating work-play environments with the offices on those second floors, and they're all connected. So it's a lot of entrepreneurs, and they're giving subsidized loans and rents to those companies.
Not at all an exact comparable, but I think we can also look and learn from what's happened in Hampton Roads, where there's been a successful technology-based effort to bring some diversity to their economy and where they're succeeding. You've read about that in our own Daily Progress about what that's meant to their local economy in terms of the entrepreneurs who have started companies and brought income both to that region and to the state. And, you know, even just down the road in Blacksburg, there's been quite a bit of success in that particular area, too, on a completely different scale.
Neil Williamson with the Free Enterprise Forum. Two questions. First, I've spoken with some folks in Texas, and they've suggested, and I don't know that it's the official motto of Austin, is keep Austin weird. Is this true?
Yeah, it's unofficial.
That's the unofficial motto. Okay. Secondly, in terms of governments working together, in speaking with these colleagues, they've talked about the Austin being somewhat of a larger city, obviously, and keeping us in mind with regard to the TJ Ped footprint with the localities. How do those localities work together on economic development and in terms of cooperation or grants or whatever it is, and what's the proper role of government in the chart that you showed?
I'll answer your last question first. I think government has a supporting role. I think there needs to be commitment and leadership from government, but I think economic development should really be led by the private sector, and it should be funded by the private sector. It shouldn't be subsidized by government. In Austin, the primary economic development organization is housed within the Chamber of Commerce, but it's a separate nonprofit organization that really uses the chamber as its marketing arm. And it does include, you know, all five of the counties that are in the MSA as well as the city of Austin. And I think they've really focused on regionalism. There's always, I don't think I've worked in any community where regionalism has actually been achieved to the perfect degree. But this one particular, the Austin Chamber of Commerce Economic Development arm, is that lead organization. And any company knows that that's the person that they need to go talk to when they're interested in Austin. And I think it's important to have that, at least a singular point of contact initially, so that you can provide a unified front. Say one other thing about Keep Austin Weird. Interestingly, that actually was started by local businesses, and it's about supporting local businesses in the face of national chains coming in. That's where it came from, and it's become this kind of larger-than-life motto. But I know that's something I think that you guys appreciate here, too.
Have you looked at San Diego's experience vis-a-vis its growth, its relationship to Los Angeles as it relates to the Charlottesville model? Because, frankly, I think that's probably the most relevant example in the country, because you have a couple of things in San Diego. You had a high, very high quality of life because of the environment. You had a first-class research university, in University of California at San Diego, which was created specifically to be a scientific research university. And third, you had proximity to the growing city of Los Angeles, which just basically moved down to San Diego over the last 25 years. We have exactly the same situation here. We have Washington. We have Northern Virginia, which is now the largest concentration of technology in the country. It's going to move down here. It is moving down here. If you go around and talk, as I do, to small companies, I've talked to several in the last month that have basically moved down here, or people have moved down here to start companies. When you talk about the loss of UVA grads, I'll tell you where they're all going. They're all going to Northern Virginia, and, you know, they'll come back. So I think that Aspen's not the model. It's not going to – we don't even have that issue. The real issue is how we deal with the growth that's already occurring. Culpeper last year – was the only city or area in the state of Virginia that was in the top 10 in terms of housing growth in the U.S. Washington is coming, and I guess the question for us is how we deal with that. And would you like to comment on that?
I'll take San Diego first. I haven't looked at San Diego. The only concern that I would have with the San Diego is that it's still extremely unaffordable for just about anybody. So that's the one thing that I would, you know, want to investigate with the San Diego model, and why I think sometimes Austin can be a good contrast to that.
Likewise, I haven't looked specifically at the relationship of San Diego to LA versus our relationship to DC. But I would comment this much to say that if we don't take these actions to help define for ourselves what we want to have happen, I believe, just like it's already happening, you know, things will happen on their own. And we need to get in gear in order to make the best out of the situation we can. Otherwise, very unwelcome things can happen, regardless of what model you believe is going to be the destination. But I know that we have looked a little bit at Santa Barbara and what happened there in terms of loss of middle class and what that meant to the economy there, and it's very similar to the Aspen situation.
Dan Brody, Health Data Services. Katie, my question about the housing, cost of housing, was that statistic drawn from the city of Charlottesville and Alamar County, or does that statistic include the whole MSA with, I'm not actually sure what our MSA includes, but does it include Flavanna, Green,
Yeah, all the statistics were MSA statistics. So both the comparison of Charlottesville to Austin to Raleigh, those were all MSA comparisons.
Okay, thanks.
My name is Letitia Green, and I'm with the Virginia Active Angel Network, and we want to thank you for spending 2 hours giving a complete, really tight reason why angel funding between the entrepreneur and the VC is really critical, and I don't think we could have paid for this much press just to make the point. But I would ask you important question that I'm not sure I understand, I suppose, between Aspen, having been there several times, Austin and Charlottesville. How does the access to an airport and any carriers that choose to go there or trains compare in these three cities?
Well, I can compare to Austin. I can't necessarily compare that to Aspen other than having skied there. Well, no, I don't even think I skied in Aspen. Certainly, the air service in Charlottesville isn't as good as it is in Austin, but when Austin first got started, they had a very small airport. It was a municipal airport, and airlines won't necessarily provide the service and the routes until the demand is there. So Austin actually had to get Dell and some of the other national tech firms to go to American Airlines and to go to primarily American Airlines and demand, you know, nonstop service between San Jose and Austin and between San Francisco and Austin. And now that's their most profitable route. But it was only after that critical mass was there. And unfortunately, that is a limiting factor in a lot of communities that we work with. But I think your proximity to larger airports means it's not necessarily completely a lost cause. And I also think that a lot of the small tech firms that you're talking about wouldn't necessarily rely on a whole lot of air service. I mean, companies today, you can telecommute. The communication is so easy on the Internet and between other forms of wireless communication that the types of technology companies that you're talking about wouldn't necessarily need the same levels of air service as a Dell might need in Austin.
I can comment just a little bit being a pilot as well. I know that the airport in Aspen is pretty famous for its limited availability due to weather and a number of other things due to the density altitude because it's so high up. So it definitely, I think Aspen actually in some ways takes advantage of the image that it's a little hard to get to. On the other hand, there are some changes happening in air transportation that I think will help the Charlottesville situation a little bit. Not only if we have critical mass enough can we leverage that to perhaps get some routes, and I think we've seen some come and go in our airport as a result of that, but due to changes in some technology and aircraft building and the lower cost of some very light jets and other things, I think we'll see airports like Charlottesville, smaller, municipal, regional airports, not big commercial ones, have more traffic available to take small companies to other small airports for prices that are comparable to current airline transportation, or at least if you factor in the time cost, it definitely would be comparable. So I think there's some things coming that will make that be not the disadvantage that it is at the moment. That would be my view.
I'm Bill Gray of Adenosine Therapeutics, and you're going to you recommend that we have a coalition among university and high-tech businesses, venture capital. What's the engine for starting that? In your experience, who comes first, and how do you get it all together? I mean, we've been talking to one another for years. And I go back a long way, and we have not come to any significant program that I can see that has worked. How do you get that started?
I want to just add before I give it to Katie to that question. I've been in the area since 1982, and I've seen some things be attempted too, and I like to think that our effort here in the Tech Council to kick this off and to bring people together to do this in a way that it's not us trying to be out in front and doing it alone, but to do it together with everybody else, to do this in a balanced, you know, we include all views, we want all participants in it. I hope that this attempt, with the maturity of that experience from the past, and I think a slightly better realization of some of the things that stand before us as choices, I'm hoping for a better outcome. Otherwise, we wouldn't be expending this effort. So I like to think that the Tech Council is the catalyst to help make that happen. Not necessarily the vanguard, but definitely we want to be pulling our weight, and we hope that others will take advantage of the opportunity to join on board.
I was just going to ask for volunteers to raise their hand right here. I don't think that there's ever just a specific organization that's consistent, you know, through communities that has to do it. I think whichever organization and whatever person or leader has the commitment and the vision and the energy to do it and bring those people together, if you think you're that person, do it.
I'm Mike West, and I'm a banker here in town with First Citizens Bank. I'm interested, Katie, in your perspective, if you have any, on what role the banking community played with Austin's renaissance. You're talking about entrepreneurship, early-stage companies, VC financing, the kind of opportunities that banks have traditionally kind of shied away from. I'm wondering how, what role, if any, did the banking community in Austin play in that renaissance?
Dr. Ring can probably answer that better next time because his background is in venture capital funding. However, I don't know that they took a lead role in it. I haven't heard much about it, so that indicates to me they haven't taken the lead role. But it's a question that I would ask Dr. Ring when he's back next month.
My name is Rick White. In the kind of that conundrum that you've identified of lower median wages and high cost of living, would you comment on kind of how you start correcting that balance? Is it easier to raise the median income than it is to slow the growth of the cost of living? And in particular, have you, I guess maybe Katie, in your experience, have you found any place that's really been successful in slowing the growth in the cost of living? Because it's really, in the last few years, that it's really started skyrocketing around here.
Yeah, by choice, not really. I think some places are seeing that happen, but not by choice. It's definitely easier to raise wages than it is to lower the cost of living, and we don't try to control those market forces generally. They're a result of supply and demand in many cases. I'll speak to Austin's case very briefly on cost of living. There are parts of Austin that are just as expensive as they are in Charlottesville. The west side of Austin, because of development restrictions, because of environmental concerns, is extremely expensive. Development is very difficult to do. The central city of Austin is very expensive. What they've agreed to do, though, is focus most of their residential development on those areas where they don't have those environmental concerns, and that's where the more affordable housing is. What was the first part of your question? And how to increase. I mean, I think it really, sometimes it takes recruiting a couple of small companies to kind of jumpstart that engine, perhaps companies that are used to paying slightly higher wages. They're willing to do that to show some of the other local companies that can happen and they can still be profitable. That's probably the easiest way to jumpstart it. It's not necessarily the answer in the long run, but it may be the easiest way to start that.
I think as we reach that critical mass, as I defined it earlier, that will also have, I think, an impact on the wages at the same time. If there's far more demand for a job here than there are jobs for them, that naturally puts downward pressure on the wages, and I think that's one of the key components here. So at least in the technology sector, as we reach that critical mass where there's a place for those people to go, then I think there'd be a good opportunity for the wages to come in line at the very least with the national average.
Brett Acre-Wade. Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Hi, Brett. I wanted to ask a kind of a question and maybe tell an anecdote first. We started an electronics manufacturing and design company in Charlottesville, and I have the pleasure to play poker with some university professors. It's pretty fun because they invent some really cool games. I've never heard of, but getting to talk to a bunch of them, they would throw, you know, tell me about their stories in investing, and usually it's spin-off technologies and mostly biotech. And one professor told me a story. Hey, I put 10,000 in this. I'm thinking about putting 10,000 in another spin-off. And I said, well, how's it done? Well, it's been 5 or 6 years, and it's finally getting to FDA trials. And he goes, would you invest in something like this, Brett? I said, well, being an under-financed, undercapitalized startup manufacturing and company, I said, I got to see a return in, you know, 6 months, a year. I'm not going to be doing anything like that with my money. But in talking with them, I realized the model here, the biotech model, is, you know, high barrier to entry, high, you know, long investment cycles here. You know, you'd be talking 5 to 10 years. And I'm just wondering if there's something germane to this model that is so pervasive in Charlottesville that it's really tough to bring a community like that together. And, you know, I look at Virginia Tech, and you look at the research park they have down there. It's literally garages with inventors, and there's just a little bit more, I mean, lower barrier to entries and a lot more going on. And the research park here is, you know, huge, multi-million-dollar buildings. North Fork, I love it. We're on the not ready for prime time players part of the park there, but as we like to call it, the backside there. But it's kind of a long-winded question, but I just kind of, you know, want to throw it out to you and wonder if there's something about this model that it's tough. Maybe we need to be focusing on growing a different part of the sector. And I looked at your graph and was thinking the software, the IT sector, is that the area that can grow faster for us? Or is biotech our, you know, really our kind of our one and only?
I'd like to just comment on at least one part of the question. One of the initiatives we have is to create a technology incubator for the area, and the goals for that technology incubator are for it to be affordable and to be fairly low cost so that the opportunity to get into it is a barrier that those startup companies can better afford. So I think that's at least one thing coming that will be different, that will change the equation for at least those companies that will manage to be accepted into the technology incubator as soon as we get that off the ground. And that should happen, I believe, this year. But as for the long cycle, I think that's the nature of the pharmaceutical development or those things that are in biotech. And I think that still could be a very strong sector for us here if we put in the angel and venture money necessary to keep it going. And there are certainly are some very notable startups that are here in town that are still going down that path and still have promise. So, while it's definitely a very long and tough road, there are people doing it already.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a model of the industry in and of itself. I think the larger question is a question for the community to have, or for, you know, the leaders of the UVA Patent Foundation, the Technology Commercialization Office, and all of the leaders in the economic field to have that conversation and see if there are ways to streamline the processes.
Philip Taylor, Hoffman White. One of the questions I've got is you brought up the critical mass of the age 25-44 bracket, and I'm wondering, with JABA getting ready to promote us as a retirement community, and I live at Lake Monticello, which was started as a retirement community, is now shifting to a bedroom community, but Spring Creek out at Zion Crossroads is very much becoming that again. As we bring in all those folks from out of the area who, when they come here and pay $300,000, $400,000 for a house and think it's a bargain because they're coming from Long Island or Boston or New York, or even $1 million for a house, they think they're getting a steal. Are we now going to wind up with a competition between JABA and their vision, which, as a special interest group, we're not going to be able to derail as a tech society? You know, are we going to wind up with some sort of really loggerheads? They're actually going to be defeating us because we're already 5 or 6% below the threshold we need to be at, percentage-wise, of population.
Well, we already know that the 64 and older is the largest, the fastest growing age demographic in our area, in the MSA. So that's a trend already well underway. I would personally not want to see us promote the area strongly, market the area as a retirement area. I understand why JABA may want to do that. I personally would not want to market it that way. On the other hand, I would not want to try and stop that from occurring altogether either. I don't think we have the forces necessary. I'm advocating, and the Technology Council is advocating, something that balances tourism and retirement in a way in which we can still have a diverse economy, not stop that from occurring.
I think a lot of the things that young professionals look for and that retirees look for are the same things. Especially young professionals that are still single and don't have the family. So I think that they're not necessarily at odds. You can recruit them equally.
I'm Mary Parker. I'm a convener of the Technology and Aging Interest Group of the Gerontological Society. And I would comment that aging is a technology growth industry, or has the potential for being so. And when companies like Intel and Philips are making major investments and looking at how their technologies would apply to an aging society, that indicates the potential. And Charlottesville has, UVA already has a good deal of health investment and IT and health investment that allies itself with that growth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think health services is your second largest cluster. A lot of the growth that we're seeing is in healthcare diagnostic technologies. It would make a perfect fit.
I think most of the pharmaceutical work that's meant to extend and enhance the quality of life, that would be almost true of any drug. I think all those are great things for our area to be invested in terms of potential technology sectors.
Yeah, Mike Drawl. I'd like to think of this as the first step in building an awareness, and it seems to me that the building of an awareness is critical to then taking the steps necessary. And really, this question's for Katie. I would like to think that this is a you spoke about marketing, and how important that was, and that was external marketing, but I would like to get your thoughts on next possible steps for internal marketing, which seems to me to be the first order of business that we need to undertake.
Yeah, certainly. Start with your internal marketing. I think that this conversation is one that should continue to be continued, and perhaps one of the outcomes out of the second session that you have is actually the creation of some committees that are tasked, or task forces, that are tasked with identifying some of the opportunities within potential targeted sectors, identifying the resources that are available within this community, and I would hope making sure that the media continues to keep this conversation out in the forefront. But I think particularly when the next session ends, that it's critical that there be 2, 3, or 4 action-oriented items that happen immediately afterwards.
Thank you very much for your questions. Please join me again in thanking Katie and Gary. Now, when Katie was mentioning what she missed most about the area, it was her scenic drives down the Blue Ridge, so we just wanted to give her a little reminder memento for your desk. So thank you again, Gary. Thank you again, Katie. Thank you again, Mike Drawl, and all your colleagues at LeClaire Ryan for sponsoring us. Please come back for the second part of the conversation, February 22nd. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks very much for spending time with us.